Tonight's probably the most important topic to me of all the ones that we've covered in the last however long it's been, 2.5 years. Tonight the topic is establishing trust. I'm going to tell you guys why this is such an important topic to me. Some of this, matter of fact, probably a lot of this, some of you have already heard, but I'm recording it for posterity, so I'm going to repeat myself. I came from a very bad beginning. I grew up in a household with a father who actively hated me, really, and every kind of abuse you can name, there was lots of it. What I learned from my father is the same thing that he learned from his father, which is the same thing he learned from his father, which was to be abusive, to be a bully, to use force instead of strength. What I did that was different, I come from a generation where we have the vocabulary to talk about this stuff, to say, wait a second, why are we still doing this? Can we break the cycle of abuse? Go ahead and have a seat, Brian. You're all fine. What I did is I spoke to my 9 siblings about this, and I said, we've got to break the cycle because this is a family history that we're not able to sustain anymore because some of my siblings had already started abusing their children. And I had the talk with them, we all came to agreement, and it stopped. Now, in my case, I stopped long before. Many of you may already know this, but I've raised 6 foster kids to full adulthood. My youngest is coming to stay this weekend for Comic-Con, and he's 28. I've been doing it a long time. My specialty has always been young teenage males, 13, 14, 15, around that area there, when I first take them under my wing. When they're in the foster care system, they are in deep crisis at that age. Nobody wants them, and they're as cynical can be. The first thing that I teach them is how to be innocent. And they can't even imagine how that could be possible. And that is in bearing to tonight's topic, and I'll talk more about that. What I do is that I tell them that just because you come from a bad beginning does not mean that you have to end up bad. I'm walking proof of that. If you talk to 2 children of an alcoholic, and one of them is a complete drunk, and the other one never touches the stuff, and you ask each one of them individually, why are you this way? And they say, well, I'm the child of an alcoholic. How else can I be? And they're both being completely honest about it. The fact of the matter is that one is being like their parent, the other one is being not that. My response to being raised in a horrifically abusive environment was to be not that. As I've said before in this area, I have probably the darkest soul of any human being in this room, and I will stand by that. I can be far crueler than anyone else you know. You hear about those sociopaths that prey upon victims and, you know, get away with it? I'm that guy. And I choose to be not that every day. The reason why this is important is because I have learned how to be trustworthy. I've learned how to be a good man. I went to all the trouble on my own since I didn't learn it from my dad. I certainly didn't learn it from my equally abused brothers. I chose to find out how to be a kind and respectable man of the community. It goes much further in my own particular case, not just with the youngsters that I've raised. And as I'm here in front of you, I give you my word that I have never once abused any of my children. I've had 19 collared boys and I have a collared slave, and I have never once even lost my temper with them. And I would say, of all the things in my life, that is the thing I am most proud of. That is the thing that I will always stand by, that I never once gave in when it would have been so easy. The work that I do as a community leader bears deeply upon tonight's topic. This is the first of 4 talks The overarching theme is how to train a boy. The topic tonight talks about establishing trust. That's phase one. Not next week, but the week after, I'll be talking about, what is it, finding the buttons? Yeah, one of them. And then, of course, we're going to have training, and then we're going to have going for it. Okay? Each one of these are things that I do when I'm training a boy. These are things you train people to do, because the problem is, in our culture, we're expected to already know things. The problem is that we don't have a lot of role models. A lot of the ones who could have been role models or should have been role models were the first ones to die. The heaviest players and the most esteemed players were the ones who started dying about 1981. I was there. I was going to two or three funerals a week for a long time. I've lost over 140 people before I stopped counting. It left a huge wound in our community. New generations have risen, and they need us. And there's a lot of dead people that won't be coming back. They're simply not going to stop being so dead. What I did with this group, with this environment, with this room, when I created it, metaphorically speaking, we are all wearing an invisible t-shirt that says mentor on the front. Because this is a place where we can share wisdom. We will be having open discussion later on during the same session today. And if you have something you want to share, please do. Because this is how we all grow. From your wisdom that you have gained, whatever your age, whatever your experience level. But what I do as a community leader is I take the community through those four steps. We'll talk more about that. But tonight on the topic of trust, if you came here early and you just do the fly on the wall thing, and you watch what happens. Not that wall, that wall. everybody looks. What you would have seen is a lot of hugs. You would have seen a lot of people glad to see each other. You would have seen the shy new people coming up and getting hugged. That's not random. That's not natural. It's not normal. The reason why it happens is because I gather people to me who are admirable, honorable, kinky, utterly perverted, but really great guys. And they attract more. And that's what we are thriving as a result of. It's a conscious process. It's not random. The reason why, when you look at those pictures and you see large amounts of people and they're serenely happy, that's not natural. It has to come from trust. We've had over 500 fetishmen sanctioned events in the last 37 months, and nothing ever goes wrong. That's not normal. That's not natural. It's fucking freaky. But it wasn't random. The reason why is because it was designed that way, because by attracting honorable, respectable, absolutely admirable, and great guys, we set the tone for everybody else. Yeah, we're wildly kinky, but we also know how to play, as you can see from any number of pictures. So let's talk about trust. Trust and intimacy are interlinked. Whether it's on a community level, whether it's on a one-to-one level, or whether it's in a big old sweaty pig pile at the Eagle last night about, what, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock? Yeah, you better start blushing. I swear to God, how am I ever going to explain this to your mother? You know? Grandkids at your age? No, anyways. So, moving on. Intimacy and trust. If I am training a boy, somebody who has proven themselves as being worthy of it, because my time is rather short and rather precious, but if I've zeroed in on somebody who has excellent good character, somebody who has a big heart, someone who keeps their word, someone who stays in communication, someone who volunteers out of the goodness of their heart, somebody who is a treasure for everybody around them, I'm going to invest the time. Because if all I want to do is jump on, pump, squirt, jump off, and go do something else, I'm just doing what dogs do. If I'm investing in somebody, if I'm building a relationship, a friendship, an intimacy, and I spend months training somebody, what's my payoff? My payoff is that we have much more fun. And that's what this series is all about. Getting to the really fun stuff. The ecstasy. And no, I'm not talking about the drug. You'll never, ever hear me promoting drugs. Don't expect it. Don't want it. Ecstasy is what comes when all the shields drop away. When all the concerns, considerations, and noise in our heads finally just disappears. Because we're among friends, because we're among people who absolutely give a good goddamn about our well-being. In order to get to that, it has to be a conscious process. Anytime I train a boy, I never do anything randomly. What I mean to say is that I'm always present to what is going on. I am always attentive from moment to moment how it's going and how it needs to go. What it is, how do I judge? I base it on what my goal is for that person. If I want them to thrive, if I want them to be happy, if I want them to learn and grow and really, really, really have transformational experiences in their life, well, it doesn't happen randomly. Somebody's got to make sure that that happens. What I am is I am a permission giver. What I'm giving people permission to do is to get back to the basics. Okay, I'm going to draw a circle in the air for all of you who are listening to the audio. You'll just have to visualize. We all start here as childhood. You're 3 years old, 2 years old. Somebody says, let's dance. Okay. And you dance and you don't care how you look. Or somebody says, let's sing. Okay. And you just sing as loud as you want and you don't care how you sound. But then life progresses. We get to about 5 years old and somebody says, shut up. You stink. You've got big ears. Oh, God, I've got big ears. So we hold back a little bit because, gosh, I never knew I had big ears. Or whatever it was. Whatever. You know, we get big boys don't cry. We don't. Or you look stupid when you dance. So we keep holding back. We keep trying to protect our tender hearts. Our tender hearts need protecting because there are people out there who, if they find out that you're a really sweet guy, they're going to say, oh, you feel like giving? I feel like taking. Ha! We've all met them. In the kink community, there's plenty of that. And that's their thing, and I say God bless them. There's a big crowd for that sort of thing. I'm not that guy. Remember, I'm being not that. I'm being the approving daddy. I'm being the kind daddy. I'm being the wise daddy. I'm being the supportive daddy. I'm not being the abusive daddy. The reason why I choose not to go to dominanceforcash.com and abuse people across the internet for cash is because I'm afraid that if I start, I won't be able to stop. I don't dare let the tiger out of the cage. The way that I let myself have all that childhood suppressed rage come to the surface is that I play with people that are looking for the hardcore stuff, but I only give them as much as they want and nothing more. Okay? So now that I've identified myself, now that I've explained, let's talk more about trust. We're going to take a short little breather. We're going to go more into discussion. We're going to have people share their experience where trust has been violated. Anybody have anything they want to share on that topic? A story that is a cautionary tale. Let's hear the bad stuff. Next week, we're going to be hearing a lot about the bad stuff. The topic next week is all about safe, sane, and non-consensual. We're here in the city of San Diego. They have laws. And we want to find out what those laws are so that we know we don't end up in jail. And this is going to be hosted by a bunch of different, wonderful different groups of people, such as the San Diego Police Department, and they're here to love us. They're not here to yell at us or to shake their fingers at us. There's kinky people in the department that this guy is coming from, and they like us. They want us to do well. They're not going to be lecturing down at us. They're going to be relating to us as brothers and saying, here's what you should know. Okay? But who has a story that they would like to share? And I need somebody to speak up. Something that has happened in the past where it absolutely went bad. Do we have any? I guess not. I guess everybody here has been treated well. That's good news. All right, so let's just move on. Somehow or another, that surprises me, because I hear an awful lot of the stories. Yes. DJ, please.
I just walked in, but sometimes there's a lot of guilt and shame attached to the incident. And sometimes when you're, shall we say, a young lad, mm-hmm. and you put yourself in harm's way, the results or the outcome are terrifying, so you never speak of it to anyone.
Yep.
And that happens to be my case. Mm-hmm. And I am not going to speak of it in this format, but it does happen.
Yep.
And it scarred me for life, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been through my process with you guys that I'm learning to no longer suppress those emotions, fears, and feelings, and to work through them. And this is a safe environment for healing as well as adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the most enlightening joy I've started to experience in coming again and again. So thank you.
You're welcome. Being in the position that I am, being the network node that I am, I hear about stuff that most of you don't get to hear about. I deal with a lot of things behind the scenes. I help a lot of people who are in distress. As somebody who deals with beginners in kinky play, I have to help people pass their traumas on an ongoing basis. People who last got flogged 17 years ago but had it happen so horrifyingly that they swore never to do it again, but now they're very timidly coming back and saying, please reassure me that this is not going to end the way the other one did. I deal with that a lot. Reason why is because somebody was not being responsible for the safety, well-being, and success of the space. The sort of topping that I do and that I'm going to be teaching during this four-part series is all about taking full responsibility. Responsibility is not a burden. It's not a gun to the head. It's not something that you wish to elude. The reason why is because the exact opposite of responsibility is victimhood. Somebody who is a professional victim, my mom, the more you dive into, oh, nothing's my fault, oh, it's so tragic, everything is somebody else's fault, I'm not responsible for anything, then pretty soon you have no further support in this world. Nobody wants to be around you because you're just going to be the next one on the shit list. Versus somebody who lives fully responsible, who's a stand-up guy, well, you've got a lot of wind beneath your wings from a lot of different people. And that's why I talk about this stuff. Because what we're intentionally doing is we're creating relationships, not just on a one-to-one basis in this group. Because there's a lot of trust in this room. There's a lot of couples that have come together as a result of meeting through this group. But also in terms of the larger community. That we're basing our relationships on real trust. Getting back to starting out as a child and then having to deal with all these little traumas of, you know, dad beating the crap out of you every time you did one thing, or whatever. All these different things that we learn to protect our tender hearts with. The conscious process that I do with every single one of my boys, with every single one of my children, with the people that are in this community, is I'm reteaching you how to start over. Last night over at the Eagle is a perfect example. Okay? Last night at the Eagle was the hands-on demo. I call it junior high. Why do I call it junior high? How many people, show of hands, how many people here went to the prom in high school? Okay, put your hands down. Now, put your hand up again if it prepared you for the life that you're living now. Yeah. It's a fucked up thing because they were not aiming at you, and yet you got dragged along for the ride. It has no fucking relevance to your existence, does it? One of the things I always talk about is, wouldn't it have been great? Let's say sixth grade. Everybody's going through puberty. You're going through health class or whatever the hell they call it, you know, human sexuality if they're particularly liberated. In Catholic school, I think they called it health class. But wouldn't it have been great if they announced in the midst of all of it, saying, okay, at 2 o'clock in room 23, they're going to be teaching how to have a successful long-term male-male relationship, or how to fuck ass really well, or how to find the joy buzzers inside a man's ass. Yeah, that was your birthright. You never got it. So what we do consciously with this group, with all the events that we're having, is we're helping people regain social skills that we may have lost along the way because we're so used to seeing each other as just another number, as just another object to throw along the path from Recon or Bareback RT or Adam for Adam or whatever, that there has to be some connectedness because we're human, because we're anthropoids. We need connectedness. Otherwise, we feel ill. Otherwise, it shortens our lives. What I do when I'm creating events such as this or the hands-on demo, I'm creating a space where it's okay to not know and to ask and to find out and to have somebody who gives a shit enough about you to teach you. And then you smile because you're happy and you're getting what you need. So it's okay to be in junior high. We're starting fresh. One of the magical things about junior high is that you get to find out just how sexy you already were, but you didn't realize. Last night, people were doing things that I heard about after I left. Time to blush. But see, it doesn't mean that they're getting married or that, you know, they're going to choose curtains or something. It just means that they got to explore without any risk of it exploding in their goddamn face. And that's what we need more than anything else is to be able to play in the kiddie pool for a while before we move up to the bigger leagues. The reason why we do this, again, it has to do with establishing trust. When we were done with last night's event, as I was leaving, it was one big puppy pile of love. The new guys were particularly pleased and gratified. And those of us who've been around a long time, we knew exactly what to do. Gather around the new guys, make them feel extra welcome, cop a feel. And, you know, and just what we did during the Pride Parade, we had the largest contingent of leather folk in the San Diego Pride Parade in our history. And just for the sake of mentioning, next year it's going to be 10 times bigger. And you can take that to the bank. That's in the plan. And I'm not letting anybody off the hook. I'm obligating you. If you like what it is that we're doing, I am fucking obligating you to show up with us. Forget about marching with the swim team or the chorus in 2014. You don't get that. It's not an option. You got to be with us because we are going to completely, completely avalanche the fuck out of Pride and be the biggest contingent in its history and be on the news and to cause everybody to treat us very differently, and where they will know, beyond a doubt, that the world has pivoted and that we're now at the front. Not as a force thing, not as a dominance thing, but as in, honestly, we're great guys. A lot of people know that. I want those 150,000 people watching the parade to go, wow. Look at them all. My God, look at them all. Oh, my God, things have changed. I don't understand this, but I want to know more. I want us to be in the news big time because we have already arrived. They just don't know it yet. So, back to the original topic. In order for us to be serene, when you look at those pictures, what you see is serenity. They're not factions hissing and spitting like we've had in decades past. It's a bunch of satisfied, diverse, comfortable, affectionate brothers. And lots of them. Didn't happen by random happenstance either, folks. This is the plan. So what I'm trying to get you to know is that it works on a personal level, it works on a cultural level. So let's talk about establishing trust, the mechanics of it, okay? If I've got a new boy under my wing, and I'm going to invest some time in him, first, I always start with coffee. I do a lot of talking. The reason why I do it, one, you know I love the sound of my own voice, but far more important, I am reassuring him. I'm reassuring the logical portion of his brain. Because everybody's got their fears. Everybody's got their concerns. They got their noise in their head. In the absence of information, we fill the gap with our own preconceptions and the noise in our heads. I don't allow that to happen. Everybody's got that little voice in their head. Maybe he thinks I'm too fat. Maybe he thinks I'm too old. Maybe he thinks my back's too hairy. Maybe he thinks I need a bigger ass. Maybe blah, 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 blah. It's in everybody's head. The purpose of that little voice in our head is to cause our lives to try and take no risks. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have done this. I'm out of here, okay? But the only person that lives a life like this, a flat existence, is a dead person. I'm just quoting. He recognizes the quote. It's not original with me. Life is risk. People will avoid risk because they're afraid that if they take a chance, then they're going to fall and they're going to skin their knees. And that's it. I'm never taking a risk ever again. But the problem is that we're never going to reach the heights if we don't take risks as well. All we can do when we have a big support system is that we can support each other in taking risks but having the trend moving upward. That's what this is about. Because when you have a big, loving, true support system, you never crash. Why would you? You've got people helping you. It's okay. You tried. We love you anyways. Try again. Try something different. We'll be here for you. That's what we do in this group. That's how it works when it works well. But that's also true how it works on an individual one-on-one level. Because what I'm supporting... Some trainee boy. He's afraid of the stereotypes. He's afraid of the big fucking scary guy with all the, you know, the clamps and the electrical and the hot wax and, you know, the whips and all the rest of that shit. And frankly, I mean, I love you guys, but this is the truth. There is nobody in this room I couldn't break like a twig. So I have to reassure people. Because a little bit of me goes a long way, and there's a lot of me. Okay? And so then I have to talk somebody off the ledge where they're worried about, you know, this big scary guy. I'm so sweet, but then every once in a while they'll get a little taste of what else I'm capable of, and it's a little alarming. So I have to basically sneak up on them, you know, and seduce them. This is true of anybody. Doesn't matter whether you're big or not. It doesn't matter what your history is. We have to find ways to reassure each other that we're okay, that we're not going to consume each other's liver. You know, one of the stories that's going to be coming next week is going to turn your hair green. It's so horrifying that there are people out there like that. Sociopaths operate under the cover of darkness. The reason why our group is so overtly huggy, sweet, kissy-kissy kind is that we are making up for the people that make such a bad reputation for us kinky guys, because they do exist and they are thriving. There's a lot of bad people out there, and every fucking one of them is on the internet looking for prey. So what we're reacting against is those people over there. The way that we do it first is by being part of a brotherhood that operates in daylight. Because someone who is a sociopath, someone who is a user, thinks we're creepy. They don't understand all this huggy-huggy crap. They wonder what the hell is wrong with us. Because the last thing they want to do is hang around us and victimize the young. And then the next time they show up, everybody say, "That's the man, officer, arrest him." So that's why they avoid us. Because life's much simpler if you can operate without anybody knowing your real name. Hey, he was in the hospital for 3 weeks. Hey, no harm, no foul. He never figured out what my real name was. They do exist. You'll be hearing the stories next week. So how do we deal with this? Again, by consciously making sure to Tommy, why don't you come stand up here? Everybody, this is Tommy, our newest member. He's a wonderful guy. He's one of the hardest volunteers that we had this weekend. And anybody who saw him in action, you know what I'm talking about. This is the real deal. So let's hear it for Tommy. So if I am working with him, obviously there's going to be some attraction, okay? That's a good thing. You know, it's nice. Pheromones are good. They match. Everybody's liking it. It smells really good. But I have to use words to reassure the logical portion of his brain. But at the same time, you'll notice what I'm doing. I'm communicating also to his lizard brain, to the deep down nonverbal portion of his brain. I'm communicating with him through touch. Okay? This touch that I'm doing right now, grabbing him by the back of the neck, gently, but nicely and firmly, is what I call the approving daddy touch. Reason why that's so important is because it is wired into us on a very deep, very, very deep level. But if you get this right here, Tommy, tell us what it feels like.
I kind of feel like I'm, you know, way you have control and I kind of trust you.
Got it. All right. Thank you. Have a seat. Thank you. Thank you, Tommy. So if I'm communicating with him on two different levels simultaneously, through touch, but also through words, what I'm doing is that I'm reassuring the noise in his head. I'm not giving it a chance to make itself obvious. Okay? If I'm taking the time to find out more about their history, I interview them. I do a lot of interviewing with a boy. The reason why is because each one is going to be different. There's no such thing as a generic playmate. I think we've all discovered that. Everybody's got their stuff. The thing is that we have to be okay with whatever that stuff is. We have to honor whatever the noise is from their past. We have to actually kind of treasure it. I'm going to talk about what I call landmines. Okay? If I'm playing with somebody and I accidentally trigger one of their landmines, I'll be flogging somebody and suddenly he wants to turn around and punch me right in the face. Because suddenly he flashed on a memory of Dad beating him when he was six. Or he starts crying uncontrollably because suddenly he remembered something that he'd suppressed for a long time. What do I do about that? If I say, get the fuck away from me. I didn't sign up for this. That says a lot about me. Instead, what I choose is to say, let's go cuddle. I want to hear about this. You are safe with me. I honor your feelings. Everything that you're sharing with me is going to stay with me, and I want to hear more. And the reason why is because, you know, term is psychodrama, you know, reliving something in order to get past it. But if I hold somebody and they're crying, and they get, what's the word? I'm trying to remember, what's the word where it's cleansing crying? What's that called again? Yeah, thank you. Catharsis. Thank you. Old man memory. It's also known as expiation, I believe, but that's the other word that keeps coming up for me. That catharsis is so cleansing for him that I can flog him for another 500 times and he'll never have that reaction again because I've established enough trust and commonality with him that he lets go of it and leaves his burden by the side of the road. We do that in this room, too, when we have open discussion. We do it constantly. We have guys that show up that are seriously damaged. And they share the deep, dark story that's been burdening them for years. And then they never have to do it again because things get lighter. Things get more comfy because you finally can let go of it because the room, frankly, is full of a bunch of sweeties who give a good goddamn about each other. The reason why last night's event was particularly transformational is because the new guys got surrounded by loving guys who welcomed them. They weren't treated as separate from. They weren't treated as, well, let us know when you've finally figured us out. Nuh-uh. They went right where the need was strongest because they're good-hearted people. That's what we do as a group, too, in this room. This is all intertwined. I'm not kidding. This is seriously intertwined. That as a culture, we are doing the same thing that I do when I'm establishing trust and commonality with a trainee. I use different terms. I might call somebody a trainee. I might call them my boy. I might call them my slave. I might call them my fuckhole. You know, whatever. But what I'm saying is that the guys that I take under my wing and that I am training, I never stop during the entire time that I know them. Please, join us. The reason why I gladly share this stuff, I don't pretend to know everything. I have no doctorate. I have no diplomas. All I have is decades of experience with a lot of boys. The thing that I have to do in every case, and I have to mean it, is I have to choose him the way he is. I'm going to make that point again using different words. Everybody's got their thing. They're worried because they're HIV positive, or they're worried because their dick isn't up to somebody's standard, or they've been picked on because of this, or they've got noise from the sixth grade in the showers from something else. And they all have that goddamn thing that's got them held back. The thing that I have to do as part of establishing trust with a boy is to choose him that way and no other way. The way that I say that is to say, I wouldn't change a thing about you, and to mean it. There is no faking of this. It's really important. It lets them off the hook. They can leave their burden by the side of the road, whatever that noise is in their head. You're giving them permission to finally get back, drawing the circle in the air, to being innocent again, childlike again, trusting again, non-cynical. Cynicism protects our tender hearts. It's what we build up over the years from all the hurt, from all the harm, from all the different things that have happened in our lives. You would think it takes diamond drills and explosives to get through cynicism. You know what it takes? Authentic touch and nothing else. Cynicism drops away instantly. How do I know that? I'm the guy who's spoken to over 4,000 individuals in the last 37 months telling them about our club. I can walk into a room full of 100 strangers and walk out with 98 email addresses, taking less than a minute for each one. So I have kind of superpowers on establishing commonality. Would you please come stand up for a second? Let's say that this gentleman here, tell him your name.
I'm Chuck.
Hi, Chuck. Hey, Chuck. Hey, Chuck. Let's say that he's come to an event, and suddenly this comes up to him, and I'm in gear. Could be in a cop uniform, could be in leather, or in my cute little skirt, you know, here. It's just so cute. Girling it up, yeah. But anyway, so then he doesn't know me. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. He's got his considerations. Suddenly, this big guy comes up to him, gets right into his physical space, and touches him. And I say, excuse me, have I spoken to you yet? Now, take a look at what I just did. I enveloped him. What the fuck is that? But it works every time. I get turned down once every 4 or 5 months. Really. This is how effective it is. What am I doing? First of all, if I'm stepping back here and I'm talking at him, it's a different form of communication. With my arms crossed, body language says, I don't trust you. I'm not particularly willing to talk to you, but I feel like I have to. Versus if I come up to him in a noisy place and I'm close to him and I talk quietly, I'm not grabbing him by the nipples going, hey, hubba, hubba, though they are magnificent. Oh, my God. Sorry. See, I'm not... The body language is different. It's distinct. Yeah. Good man. I think they're wired, baby. Let's all find out during the break. So then I'm establishing trust through touch. I'm breaking down his defenses because he doesn't know what the hell to think. The first time I talk to him, he's like, what kind of drugs is he selling? But if I'm talking to him and I say, this is our event, let me tell you about it. Do you mind if I give you the brief welcoming message? Okay, knock yourself out. And I'll say, I mean, you all have experienced me in some level or another. You know, you've had the routine. It varies, but this is the one I'm using right now, which is the first thing that you should know is that you are welcome here, that you belong here, and we want you here. You're going to fit it right in. So let me tell you how that works. And I'll explain it to them in very clear statements. And I'll say, do you have any questions? Do you have any thoughts? But I'll say, here, let me introduce you around. What am I doing? Thank you very much for volunteering. But what is it that I'm actually doing? I'm reassuring him that he can trust. I'm letting him know the most important thing right off the bat. I mean, other than from me, show of hands, how many people here have ever been told, you belong here, we want you here? Other than from me. Right. In the world, other than me. There you go. Good. It's important that we say that. It's important that we make it overt. You can't assume. And that goes with training a boy. That goes with welcoming people into a community. It has to be said, and it has to be meant. It has to be authentic. Otherwise, there's no point in wasting your goddamn breath. You have to mean it. When I talk about accepting people, not just accepting people, not just tolerating them, but choosing them. Choosing them the way that they show up, the way that they are. When I talk about that, that goes for the larger community too. One of the signal points about Fetishmen in San Diego, you look at those pictures from the parade, it's wildly fucking diverse. We're the envy of every other kinky men's group on earth because we've got the variety and it's all on the same level. Everybody's happy. Well, like I said, that's the goal. In order to do that, we have to choose people the way that they show up. Not someday if they get better abs or, you know, less old or, you know, maybe next lifetime when you get better genetics or any other bullshit. What if we just like people the way that they show up? What if we choose them? The reason why is because the payoff is that this shows up. We get the full value from every one of these wonderful men and more and more and more because there's a lot of people that would love to be here for whatever reason they couldn't make it. But they'll be listening to this. What I'm leading up to is that in order for us to establish trust, we have to be trustworthy. And we have to be overtly, blatantly, obviously, unmistakably trustworthy. When I'm doing on my blah, blah, blah with a new trainee, there's an intentionality behind it. What I'm doing is I'm reassuring that part of his brain that says, what if he's going to turn out like that bad guy from 6 years ago? What if he doesn't really like me? You know, all the noise in our heads. What I'm doing is I'm letting them leave all that beside. It doesn't matter anymore. If I'm establishing trust, I'm actually establishing intimacy. That's the highest priority, intimacy. Nothing progresses without trust and intimacy. Sure, you can get your nut off. But for real fun, for the real depth, for the real experience, we like to dig deeper and find out much more about that playmate of ours. It's like, okay, I'm going to make Timothy uncomfortable real quick. Why don't you tell us about what it's like for you to establish intimacy with a new trainee, with a new boy? Give me an example in your own life. How do you establish intimacy and trust with a boy?
Communication is really, really key. And finding out what limits are, what expectations are. I try to find out, it's like when I started training this one, and he, you know, I would ask him, what are you into? And he couldn't articulate an answer. And this one is very, very articulate. So I use porn. I show movies. I'm like, what turned you on in that? And we figure out where interest lies, what kind of things are there, and we work really slowly building limits and just checking out limits and then pushing limits, but while everybody feels very safe and very nurtured while it's happening. And,
Thank you.
I have a collared slave. A lot of you know that, John. And John is a real nurturer, and I like to use him a lot when I'm training because he's really good. He's really good with helping with aftercare and making sure that you're not just left out there in subspace after you finally reach it, and that it's a really pleasant experience. And I try to make things go slowly enough that it's not overwhelming and that they have a chance to absorb every little thing, and then we talk about what they liked and what they didn't like and what might go on to the position that they don't really want to do that again, or while they want to do that again as quickly as possible, what are you doing tomorrow night? So it, but communication, talk.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And honesty about it. It's like, you know, if it's not what you're into, you have to be open and honest about it. Otherwise, it's not going to be fun for anybody that's involved in the play.
Yep.
You know, when you talk about taking care of a boy and training a boy right, it's funny. I've got a friend who is in London who's a master who really should belong to our group, but he's like banging his head against a wall because they have a whole different mindset about the value of a really good boy in London, and they think it's something to be used up and thrown away. Seems to be the mindset that he's running into all over the place, and it's driving him nuts.
Yep. Thank you. Someone else has something they want to say? On establishing trust. All right. Yeah, someone says?
What?
Yeah, go to details. Let's hear it. You like to scare him, and then... ..
No, I just wait to watch them squirm until I'm happy.
I get that, yes. We all know that about you, honey. It's good. So we're going to turn it around. We're going to change the tempo. We're going to shift the entire concept tonight. What we're going to do is we're going to start with John. We're going to go around the room this way. And we're going to talk about intimacy, and we're going to talk about trust, whatever that means to you. Please.
Okay, intimacy and trust. Well, as far as intimacy is concerned, I think to me it means connecting with someone by figuring out what it is that you know, flips their switches. You know, what it is, you know, whether it be emotionally or sexually or, you know, whatever, what, you know, being, showing interest and consideration for the other person. You know, not just finding out what it is, but actually taking actions based on that.
Thank you. Actually, Gary, this jug here. Thank you. Very good.
And trust. That's you know, that's something that it's hard won, especially after it's been lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that people seem to give freely when they're first getting to know someone. In a lot of cases, you know, depending on the person, but then once it's been abused, then it's hard to get back.
Yep. And that just, thank you for making that point. Because, again, historically, if someone has found that they cannot trust, it takes a lot to build that trust back up. You know, like I said, I spent a lot of my time healing mental wounds. Thank you. How about you?
Well, to me, the trust has to come first, whether it's me as the dad with my boy, or whether it's me as the dad with my sir, there's got to be that trust there before you have that intimacy. And the trust comes from a lot of talking. And I do, like you do, I do a lot of touchy-feely, which I think sometimes the touch can do a lot. lot more than just the talking. It's that reassuring, nurturing type part of it. So trust is very important. The intimacy comes from a lot of talking and touching also. But I look at it when I'm training a boy, it's not about the sex. Like right now, I'm going through a separation from my last boy, and to keep myself occupied, I've taken on three boys to train. For the most part, it's not a sexual thing. I do a lot of required reading, not necessarily gay or boy related. It's psychological reading so that they understand the roots in here.
Right?
Yes. And then I have them read a lot of leather protocol books so they know how, when they meet a master or a sir, they know how to talk to them and they don't embarrass themselves, let alone me. And it's a whole process of learning, getting the mind straight. And then we go into, and while we're doing that, but then we go into what it is they want to know about, what they want to learn, and then I share with them what I want them to know about and what I want them to learn, and that I'm not an expert. I used to be able to flog, but I won't do it anymore until I learn again. So if that's what they're interested in, I will find someone that is good at that and have them do that. If they want to know sounding or anybody wants to know sounding, I'm good at that. So there's different things. I'm not going to do something to train my boy if it's something I don't know about, I'm not sure about, but I don't want to exempt them from having that opportunity. So.
Very good. Thank you. Please, Jeremy.
Okay. To me, intimacy doesn't...
And say your name.
I'm Jeremy. Haven't been here in a little while. To me, intimacy is not necessarily something that is just sexual. I have a few friendships that I would call intimate, close friendships. Some of them are even female. Intimacy is a relationship that is close enough to me to care about the day-to-day of that individual, to care about what is going on in their life, to care about their well-being so much that if they're not doing well, it's going to affect me too. Intimacy is, oh gosh, switching over to trust. Trust is something that even myself, I have historically given too easily, and jump into things too quickly and be trusting. Where am I going with that? I lost my train of thought, Papa.
It's okay, though. Tell you what, you gather your thoughts on
I'll
it,
gather,
you
just
get, you give me a holler.
Come back to me.
All right. Please.
I don't think trust and intimacy are separable. I think you can't build intimacy without trust, and I don't think that trust can be established in a moment. I think it's something that builds up over time. It's being a stand-up guy and doing what you're saying you're going to do. As far as coming with the training of a boy, it's you know, making sure that you are taking care of your needs and his needs, mostly his, and making sure that he's not coming to any sort of harm and that you're creating a safe environment for exploration. Once you've kind of reached that exploration and reached that level of trust, you can start at, it's when the trust is exchanged, is established, that you can start pushing limits and going further and deeper, and that's when intimacy really comes into it. When somebody is like a little nervous about something, but they've got enough trust in you that they'll let you take them to that next level, and it's at that next level most of the time that you'll find those really intimate moments that integrate you as a couple.
Very good.
He makes the point better than I could. You know, I mean, I was going to be getting to that. But we talk about pushing the limits. What it's really about is trusting somebody enough to find out what those limits are. You know, one of the great joys for me is pushing somebody past their limits with their joyful assent. And that's when magic can really, truly happen. We'll be talking about that during the fourth talk. But yes, how about you? Trust
well,
and intimacy.
I would echo the sentiments of my sir and just add to it that, at least in my personal experience, I lost trust very early
and then sought a means to try and regain that through what I was thinking was intimacy, but was really just the mechanics of sex. And it really has only been very recently that I've started to regain a sense of trust in other people and to understand that intimacy requires taking down your own boundaries and barriers to discover for yourself what those might be and to let someone else in enough to help you explore those as well.
Very good. Thank you. How about you?
My name's Kevin. I haven't been here for about a month. All I could probably say is I would be repeating what the five or six gentlemen to my left have already said, but I'm trying to, you know, I don't know if I want to be a boy or if I could be a boy. I don't know how to find a sir, but I enjoy coming to these meetings and hearing what people have to say as far as the two trust and
intimacy.
I say
it is going to be on the test.
They go hand in hand as far as I'm concerned, and I want to be a trusting person, but once I've lost the trust with somebody, it's gone forever, and I don't think that there's any way in my mind. That it'll, once I don't trust you, forget it. You're out of my life, I guess, and I don't trust anything you say. But I do want intimacy in my life, and I don't know how to get it. So I'll continue to come to these meetings and hope that I find it someday.
Very good.
Thank you.
Now, I was talking about that'll be on the test. There's actually three tests after the fourth talk. There's the written, the oral, and the anal. Yes.
What about the endurance?
That's all good. Yeah. Both persistence and accuracy, too. Yeah. Please.
I would say that intimacy is vulnerability met with acceptance. Hmm. And that trust is a history of intimacy.
That's good.
So, what I mean by that. When you're vulnerable, maybe in the example like Papa Tony said, where you've hit a landmine and you've triggered something and then you're crying or whatnot, you could be met with, you know, unacceptance or rejection, and then you're just done. If you're met with acceptance, though, then you'll have an intimate moment where you're sharing and where you feel loved and that you feel like it's okay. And if that happens over time, if you have a history of intimacy, then you begin to trust someone and know that it's okay to be vulnerable about them, or maybe to be even more vulnerable, or vulnerable in a different way where you haven't before, and then it continues to grow.
Well said. Well, I'm Brett, and there is just, I just think about intimacy in so many different levels. The intimacy that I feel like in this group or on Tuesday nights, and I keep being reminded about what I missed last night. And people keep reminding me all night about what I missed last night. But you can't do it all, right? But feeling a part of a community, I think there's intimacy on that level, feeling like, you know, faces that I see, and, you know, when you smile, and there's hugs. So there's that intimacy. And then there's the more intimate intimacy, which I know there's trust and intimacy when there's not a lot of the, you know, that my brain just kind of stops thinking too much. And I know I'm there and I'm present in the moment. And things are just natural and it's really fun. And there's just such a difference, like, in... I mean, we you know, our relationship is open. And, you know, we both played a little separately. And it's fun, but it doesn't compare to what we do when we're together. I find that there's so much because the trust and intimacy is there, that when we're intimate, it is at a whole nother level that is just amazing, and it's just continuing to deepen. You know, we've been together, what, 5 months now? And, you know, I think we're still peeling the layers, I think, you know, and it's still new, and it's great. And it's, yeah, wouldn't trade it for anything.
And how did you guys meet?
We met in here.
Yeah.
He walked through this door. I was sitting probably right about here, and I just went over here.
Please, trust and intimacy.
They're both in a line for me because I'm not a talker. So when I'm very physical, so I have to establish trust by being physical and exploring, and I don't know, I just, I'm able to do it physically and they just trust me.
Very good. How about you?
Oh boy.
What's your name?
Stuart. And I do echo a lot of what the people over there said, but on the other side of that equation, I've found many times, you know, it's difficult to let go and trust people and be vulnerable, and I think that's something that, you know, I'm learning to deal with as I go along. And trust is when you feel you can actually just be yourself with somebody and say what you really think and really feel, and allow them to do the same, and without being judged and rejected.
Very good. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Scott. I think that intimacy and trust is very multifaceted, like many of life's joys and all the other many of the other things that go along with that. So while I do agree with and understand what has been said so far, I think that there is I think the distinction between physical intimacy and emotional intimacy may need to be made. And because I know that I don't necessarily have to trust someone in order to be physically intimate with them. Certainly, you can go down to a fine establishment on Fifth Street and not even know the person's name, and you're physically intimate with them. I would not say that I trust them. and I also agree with what has been said, in that after successful couplings and successful encounters and successfully and happily being intimate, then there is some familiarity that would allow me to let my guard down, which is to be increasingly more vulnerable to the point where where my guard is more and more relaxed and reduced. I have experienced that in the past. Certainly, when there's a high level of trust and the intimacy is deep, it's very fun to just be with the other person and let what happens. That's what I have to say on that at this point. There may be more later.
Hi, I'm Brian. For me to be authentic, I want to be intimate, both wherever it's naturally comfortable for me, if that's in private or public, just not as a role play in either place. That's intimacy. I just want it to be open. I think it's not to save it for one certain spot. I think it happens more naturally, intimacy, and I like to share it wherever it's comfortable, and with someone that doesn't want to do it in public or certain places, that's not really authentic, and maybe I would lack some trust in that person when they hold off or save it for certain places. That's just my thing. Trust, I would hope Kevin was saying that they never get it back. I think with communication, I would hope that I think I've lost trust in, you know, a relationship, but when we're able to communicate and talk about it, I can get that trust back with some reassurances that, you know, this, you know, bothered me, I trusted you, and this is how you let me down, and I would want to get that back. You know, I would hope that, that I could get that trust back. So
you give them other chances.
I would think, yeah. It would, I guess how egregious it would be the trust that was broken.
And thank you for bringing that up, because again, we go back to landmines. Because if you trigger something in somebody and they go, oh, that's it, I knew it. You know, I'm out of here. And you said, I just brought up the topic of pickles. What the hell is that? And you have no idea, you know, what happened with pickles when they were 7 years old. And so then you can't always take responsibility for how things go if, you know, the landmine just blew up in your face. And that's happened to me more than a few times. Just as a quick aside, thank you for bringing that up. Trust goes in both directions. I've been portraying my talk as if it only flows in one direction, where I'm reassuring the poor, delicate little blossom in my control that I'm, you know, not this big, scary monster. But I also need to say that it goes in the other direction, too. I can be fucking devastated with somebody who has broken my heart. And it has happened. Where it throws me off my game, where I just cannot stand to try again because my heart has been broken. It sounds very tragic and very dramatic, but I've been thrown off my game multiple times by investing deeply in somebody. I mean, I'll make a good story here. One of my boys, I've had a lot of boys. Years and years ago, I was pretty tired of being a public figure. I was going through a bad phase. I was kind of done with it. I went up to L.A. Leather Pride with my new boy. He and I have been working together for about 2 months now. We had a lot of fun, but only in our spare time. This was our first chance to do some honeymoon, baby. So I showed up to L.A. Leather Pride, and instead of spending all my time being Papa Tony, I spent all my time thrilling the hell out of that boy. I mean, we did everything. I mean, all the things he'd always fantasized about, oh, we did it. And we were just absolutely intoxicated and just like fluttering around each other like butterflies. It's called limerence. Man, we were enjoying the shit out of our honeymoon. Monday morning, he called me up and he says, I can no longer see you ever again. This is the last time I was speaking to you. Wow. Took me 2 months of begging to find out what the hell happened. He was in recovery, and he was afraid that he was becoming addicted to me. But he couldn't tell me that for some damn reason. And it threw me off my game for a long time. It crushed me like a bug. Big, tough, butch son of a bitch like me, I invest like crazy in my boys. The trust has to flow in both directions, too. I remember one guy, I wasn't particularly emotionally attached to him at the time, but he was this big, tough guy, big dick, mighty man, muscle, you know, taller than me. And he wanted to learn how to be a bottom boy. So he started playing, but he was very stoic. Wasn't good at giving feedback. So with those kind of guys, I give them orders. I say, okay, tonight before you go to sleep, send me an email to me exactly what happened as if I wasn't there, as if you were telling your friend. Tell me what happened. Tell me what you liked. Tell me what you didn't like. Give me the feedback that I need because I'm not getting it through what you're putting out. So we did that. I think we played four times. The fourth time, I had him up against the glass sliding door, and I was fucking him. We were having a good time. It was about the fourth time I fucked him that day. We were having a grand old time. Suddenly, he just starts collapsing and curls up into a fetal position on the floor. I'm like, what the hell? And then I said, you know, I think maybe we need to cut this scene short and maybe do some cuddling. Respond. I said, okay, would you like to take a shower? And I'm trying to talk to him, and suddenly he gets up, he gets dressed, and he leaves without any word at all. And I was baffled. I didn't know what the hell was going on. And at some point afterwards, within the next few weeks, he sends me a message saying, you raped me. I said, no, actually. actually I was there. I remember it differently. And somehow or another, he felt that it was very important to punish me for some transgression that somebody did in the past. It didn't have anything to do with me. I give you my word of honor. There was no rape involved. He was having a piggy time with it. He liked being a bottom boy, but somehow or another, he showed up with that particular thing that he laid on me, and it took me 6 months to take on the next guy, because I had a lot of trouble trusting after that. So I'm just saying, be aware that it's not a one-way flow of trust. So please, your thoughts about anything to do with trust.
My name is Chuck. I also had a varied past when it comes to trust issues, and I made some pretty large mistakes. And I think right now, I think if I was going to define trust, trust has to be earned for me. You have to say what you're going to do and do what you say, and then I have to, of course, abide by the same rule myself. I kind of put myself under that. But intimacy, how I kind of define it, is into me you see. It's not something I coined, of course, but. And that, for me, is just walking through fear. I have all kinds of, like we had mentioned before, all kinds of walls that I've put up and fears that I've got, rational or irrational. I feel like that for me to allow someone to see who I really am, I have to walk through the fear of exposing who I am. And if that person laughs, then of course I'm going to shrivel up and you know, not expose. Mm-hmm. And I feel like trust and intimacy, if I don't have the trust initially, then I'm not going to be able to walk through that fear, because I'm going to, you know, they go hand in hand. So that's the best way I can describe it, I guess. I feel like if I can trust a person and I can let down my guards and I can be who I am, mm-hmm. at that point, then I will show you, you know, we will be intimate, because I will have exposed who I am. I will trust that you're not going to harm me verbally, physically, emotionally, or mentally. And then I think that, to me, is way even way more important than sex. I've had lots of sex in my life, and to me, sex now cannot happen in any kind of quality manner without the intimacy forming.
Yep.
So, you know, to me is what it's my little spiel on. So.
Thank you. Short names, how many people here prefer quality over quantity? You wouldn't be in this room, frankly, if you weren't. A man reaches a certain transition point, and thank you for bringing this up. But once you've had quality, you're not willing to settle anymore. We all have to go through a phase of liberating our dick or our butt or whatever. It's natural to us. We didn't get to go through it through grade school. We didn't get to play, you know, maybe I got to play with the neighbor boys. Oh, yes. But what I'm saying is that our culture did not say, go play with the neighbor boys. You know, good for you. You know, they were caught. I mean, you know, my best friend's mom saw us horsing around in the pool and she couldn't get us apart fast enough. Well, And it took a lot of work to do it. What I'm saying is that our culture has stunted us. So we didn't get the agreement, like the example I gave earlier. We didn't get the agreement that what we were doing was normal, healthy, proper, and, you know, needed. So the moment we get the chance to dive in deep and just go hog wild, then of course we're going to do it. It's natural. But at a certain point, you reach the point where you just say, you know, I know what a dick looks like. I know what all this stuff is for. But that experience that I had with that one guy, and I felt transported to a new level. I want more of that. Well, that's really what we're really talking about. That's the goal of transporting to a whole new level and finding out what levels are beyond that. That's really what the goal is of all. That's why we're having this discussion. That's why this topic is so key. That's why it's so precious to me. Why I said this is the number one favorite for me of all the ones that we've done. The reason why is because if we're going to have satisfying lives, extreme intimacy, otherwise known as kink. Because really what we are is we are setting the tone for the rest of human society because we've discovered extreme intimacy. That's what kink always was and always will be. We're connecting much deeper than most people think or even know about. What they're seeing in those people out there in that parade, and we're strutting along, and we all know what each other looks like naked. We all know what each other is into, and it's okay with us. We all like each other the way that we are, and that's intimate too. We've seen each other in absolute transports of ecstasy. The example I'm going to bring up is Damien, being the orthodontist's dream. Because he's so endorphinated out of his mind, you can see every tooth in his head because he's grinning so big. He can't help it. You don't get to that with the usual thing. You get to that with extreme intimacy. And that's really what this is all about, the whole fetishman thing all along. That's why this topic is so key. So thank you. That really helped prompt me on that one. Thank you. Please.
My name is Donnie. I'm sort of newbie to this group. I've been to the meetings a few times. Trust and intimacy. With trust, you have to have an openness. You have to have communication. Be able to talk to each other about your feelings, things you want, things you'd like to try. Intimacy, you have to have a connection, whether it be physical or emotional. They do go hand in hand. But all in all, I think a lot of it goes together with just communication and talking to each other, and that's how you get to both things.
Very good. Thank you, Donnie.
I'm Gary.
I think trust is an expectation and a requirement in a relationship, whether that's a romantic relationship or any interpersonal relationship. I think it has to include honesty, acceptance, tolerance for differences. I think there has to be a reliability factor in there. With intimacy, I do believe that we all do have this personal space around us. And I believe my space belongs to me. And I think the intimacy occurs when one brick at a time or one stone at a time, you can let somebody in as trust develops. And when you let them through that brick and you're still free to be who you are, you can have intimacy. I think the romantic intimacy and any emotional intimacy kind of go hand in hand. I think of moments, you know, like, well, especially with Amin, that we can be at two ends of a room and somebody will say something or we'll see something. We just look at each other. We know exactly what each other's thinking. Or a private joke that we have and we'll be somewhere and something will trigger that. And it's just, I think those are intimate moments. I think for me, they're moments that I absolutely love. I mean, they're the high points in a relationship for me. I think of one night in P-Town. We were there for Bear Week a couple years ago, and we were on the straight end of town, and it was late at night, but this band was still playing, and it just was great music, and it was a beautiful night, and we just grabbed each other, and we danced, and it was an intimate moment in, like I say, at that point, it was the straight end of town. Those are the moments that make everything worthwhile.
Nice. Very nice.
Supposed to follow that.
Bring your own flavor. Bring your own flavor.
Well, I don't have anything really. My name is Amin. I don't really have anything new to add. It's all about being able to let your guard down, letting someone know you. Really know you physically, mentally, and knowing that's okay to do. And it's also about recognizing when someone's doing that for you and realizing it's a privilege and not abusing it. Mm-hmm. The end.
Hi, yeah, I'm JP. I was thinking, I liked your analogy or your metaphor, whatever it is, of the bricks, because that's how it really is for me. People have to go through a certain amount of time and experience for me to really feel that trust. Certain things have to happen. I can name one thing, is that if I have an issue with you, I need to know that you'll talk to me about it and not just walk away. That's one thing. Another aspect of that I was thinking about, though, is that I'm also kind of working on myself, my own self-esteem and my own inner strength, so that I don't need to feel vulnerable with anybody. Or, you know what I mean? There's like, I have enough confidence and self-love that I don't depend on another person to the point that they can destroy me.
Yes.
That's my goal, anyway. So.
Good goal. It's really important to be able to let go of taking things personally.
Yeah, I wanted to actually say that earlier, the issue of confidence, and I think that's a big part of the equation of being able to open yourself up and just be comfortable in who you are and what you like and so on and so on, and just and actually that's a very sexy thing to see in somebody else, is confidence, and you know, see that they're comfortable in their own skin. So yeah, I appreciate you bringing that point up, Dave.
Very good, thank you. And just to interject myself, I have an agenda. The work that I am doing consciously with this group is to increase cockiness. That's one of the things that we need more than anything else. Self-assurance. Grace. Gravitas, in many cases. Being able to encourage people to be fully self-expressed and then to be rewarded for it. To get a reward system going. We do that. It's a conscious process. It's not accidental. It's not random. The reason why this is so important, why we did what we did last night. So I taught people, I shared with them, I made sure that people were getting their needs handled, I was taking full responsibility for the safety, well-being, and success of the space. It's what I do. I'm teaching other people to do the same thing. We have a lot of them in this group now that do that as well. Basically, I call it dungeon master training. Because we have to have safe spaces so that people can experiment. So that people can take chances and then be rewarded for it. How many people here have taken chances and been rewarded for it? Show of hands. There you go. It doesn't stop, does it? It's not conditional, is it? It's not something we do once every 9 months. It's in every opportunity. That's why I'm giving people the opportunity to share tonight. This is not something we're inflicting on anybody. This is something that's an invitation to share your wisdom so that other people can be listening to this 3 years from now from off the website and go, oh, I never thought of it that way. You don't know how your life ripples outward in through your words and through your influence. That's why we're doing this. You have the possibility, without ever knowing it, that you could be transforming somebody else's experience. So thank you. Yes,
I'm Tom. And I had to put my glasses on because I wanted to see your faces when I talk, because otherwise you're just blurry. So that's why I put my glasses on. This group and other groups that I go to, and just over the last few months, the boundaries and the foundation that I thought was there has been changed dramatically. And I thank all of you guys, and Tony especially, for allowing that to happen, because I used to kind of pride myself on not trusting anybody, and that just got me stuck and really practically suicidal and not wanting to be around anymore. And I had to do a different way. So over the last few months, I've chosen to do a different way, which is coming here vulnerable. And, you know, it doesn't mean it's kind of a weird metaphor, but intimacy is about being naked. Not literally, but, you know, figuratively as well. If there's no risk, there's no intimacy. If there's a possibility that it might hurt you or might not hurt you, there's no intimacy also. And going past that shame that you know, I was raised with, I think most people were raised with, going past the shame that says you're not good enough or smart enough or cute enough or tall enough or young enough or whatever it is, and getting through that and breaking through that barrier. And I think walking through this door, you know, me doing this a couple months ago and everybody coming in here and being transformed through, Tony said something earlier, your kink is intimate play, and I had never heard that before. It's like, oh, maybe that's what's starting to happen with me. Because I am starting to trust people. I wouldn't come here, you know, week after week dressed like this. It's fun, but it's also exposing myself in a metaphorical way as well. I want to get to know you guys. And I used to think play was just, it had to be with somebody that you were monogamous with and all this other stuff. I'd love to play, not necessarily sexually, play sports and everything, because it freed my body from, you know, from these things that you can't do this. I love still, I mean, I'm a physical person, and sports are a joy to me, and I don't even like keeping score anymore. I mean, I trained for triathlons. I used to be a triathlete. I still am, but I don't want to compete anymore. I just like playing. I like training, and I'm learning to play sexually without expectations or anything like that, and it's nice because of this group. So I'm overwhelmed by things are changing. One last thing I'll say, I ran the Pride run the other day, the 5K, and they said wear rainbow stuff, so I got this really skimpy rainbow underwear and rainbow wristbands and rainbow neck thing, and I was thinking, if this was San Francisco, everybody'd be stripped down. And I thought, you know what, fuck it. So I pulled out my cutoffs, and I had these really skimpy, and it was great. People are like, oh, now I have permission to do that. If one person has permission to do something, yep, other people start doing it.
Yep.
I ran down the street, I had the time of my life in this fucking diesel underwear, and people were cheering. I was like, fucking, I think it was very cool. Yay! People were smiling. I used to have a fish face. I mean, it might still, I hope I don't, but people were smiling back at me. I was like, what the hell? What's going on? What are they doing? And I was sober. It was great. So, anyway, thanks.
So just as a quick sidebar here, I've been wearing glasses since I was 4 years old. I had my eyes lasered about 20 years ago. I had 20/1200 vision, which meant that my reading distance was the end of my nose, and that if I was staying in a hotel, I had to find my glasses before I could find the bathroom. So I had my eyes lasered, so I have very good vision. But I wear reading glasses so that I can read, because my lenses have become stiff over the years. But the point that I'm leading up to here is, I think that Tom looks really good with his glasses on, and he doesn't have to be blind in order to make us think that he's handsome.
Right?
Whoa, green!
Sense of it is, if intimacy is the connection, then trust is the measure of how willing you are to enter in that with another person. And the connection can be as simple as eye contact or a handshake, all the way to upper level.
Very well said. Thank you.
I'm Gary. I grew up in an alcoholic and abusive home too, and you can't trust your parent. You learn not to trust anybody.
Yep.
So that was how I spent many years of my life, with no intimacy. And even when I was physical, I was present, but it just wasn't the same. It took some years of therapy before I learned how to be intimate with other people. Now I'm kind of, like Jeremy had mentioned, that, you know, I have intimate relationship with friends, and I have, you know, intimate relationships with lovers as well. There doesn't have to be sex involved. You know, I have some really good friends that I share anything with, and I know they won't judge me. And, you know, I can be, have that intimacy level, and they know all my dirty little secrets. You know, I don't have to have sex for that intimacy. But it took me a long time, though, after I learned to be intimate, to have that intimacy on both levels. Because I could have the sex part, and that worked really good, but I couldn't be intimate emotionally with my sexual partner. And, you know, I could be intimate with friends, but I wasn't sexual with them. So it was a real struggle in relationships, you know, so that took a little bit for me to get over. So, you know, it was about trusting my partner, and that's what it came down to. You know, I if I don't have that trust, then I can't be intimate.
Okay.
Thank you. Please. Magnum, everybody, my name's Magnum. Somebody said it over there about, had mentioned about trust, and once it's broken, you can never go back. On one hand, I agree with that, and then on the other hand, I'm on that journey of, I was in the leather community early on, like 2008, 2009, and my trust was broken, and I pulled away, but since that time, I've had time to take a look at all that and to find out what was my part in it, and my part in it was that I had high expectations and a lot of high demands. And what I find out with trust, to trust somebody is definitely communication, knowing myself, to trust myself, and that takes time. That doesn't happen overnight. I think that happens for me. It happens with age. I'm 52 now, and things that I had expectations with when I was 32 or 22 has changed since I was, now that I'm 52. And I think it's like a start-stop thing with me with trust. It's like we start and then stop, take a look at what's going on and communicate. And with that, that ends up, for me, developing intimacy. And intimacy for me is that I can be with you and I can be myself. And that happens with trust. Intimacy is like being myself with someone else. And being in the kink environment, there's definitely a power exchange, definitely between two men. And for me, it definitely, I have to let go of my expectations of what's going to happen and just try to be in the moment and be in the now and be here. And, my journey, and you mentioned it too about knowing everything, and I don't know any, the door has just been cracked a little bit for me and my kink and my SM, and I have to let go of those expectations and be open and be vulnerable. And that's the trust. And one thing is that I've been in a relationship. Somebody told me early on, they said, if you really want to know about intimacy and trust, is get in a relationship. And I've been in one for coming up on 5 years. And that has been the school, the college, the university of about relationships, about asking for what I want. And I might not get what I want, but at least what I've discovered is that if I just ask, it's like instead of holding it back, just ask for what I want. And stand in that.
He brings up something that I'm glad that he did. I use words that creep people out when I'm talking about fetishmen. They think I'm nuts, especially in other cities. I say we are childlike. We are vulnerable. We're affectionate. We're sweet. And that's like cussing. For a lot of guys, Leatherman, they don't dig the idea of Leatherman being sweet. Leatherman Butch, where massive masculinity, balls dragging on the ground, peeing on trees. Yeah, we're all that. But in order for us to find trust, we have to get back to where we started. I tell people, if you look at those pictures on that iPad that are going around, you can't Photoshop happy into a picture. Either it's there or it's not. The tone of every one of those pictures is puppies in a pile. And I'm very proud of that. No shame whatsoever. The reason why is because that's what we need as a tribe more than any other fucking thing. We don't need more random sex. We can get that. We don't need any hyper-macho stereotypes. We can find them. Mm-hmm. That part's handled. You want to find whatever the hell you're looking for, it's out there. What we have not had is what is in this room, which is connectedness, which is relatedness, which is authenticity, which is full self-expression, which is kindness.
connectedness. And that's what makes us so different. And that's what I'm trying to teach these other cities. You've got to start back at the beginning. Be that happy three-year-old. Sing with all your heart, even if you're not very good at it. Nobody gives a fuck. Dance with your arms above your hip like no Leatherman's ever supposed to do. And don't give a fuck while you do it, because life is all about dance. It's all about rejoicing. We made it through the fucking flames as a tribe. And rather than being dreary about our past, because we've lost a lot, instead of being sad and droopy and grieving until everybody's really fucking tired of us, instead of laying at the bottom of a 6-foot deep hole and waiting for somebody to kick dirt over us, we're playing full out now. We're fully present now. We're living the good life now. These are the good old days. And we're in it together, all of us. We don't have to worry about the past anymore. It's dead. All that we do now is joyful future, and all I see is it's getting bigger and bigger and better and closer and sweeter and more affectionate and more unified and more cohesive and more intimate. Go for it, Marty.
Okay, my name is Marty. I've been in the community a long time. But anyway, I think that there's a different level of intimacy in a couple that is a monogamous couple and one that is an open couple. Only because if you're monogamous and you have that intimacy all the time, being truthful, you can talk, and you know, and that's okay. When you're in an open relationship, you have that same intimacy, but you also have to have, when you play, you should be playing with someone you can feel intimate with. Or at that point, trust is a problem with me in that I just got out of an 8-year relationship. I trusted the person, and that just went out the window. He always said, well, you know, you're so good at communication, and I can't communicate. I can't talk. I wish I had that ability. So for the last year, I've been really laid back. Haven't gone out to a bar, came here maybe once or twice, and just laying low, and I finally have begun seeing somebody, and I went to a conference of friends down in Fort Lauderdale, and there was this young boy who, he came back from a bear den party complaining about how dark it was. We started to get to know each other. The next night, he sat with me and told me about his problem that he's having with his lover and getting a job. And so we sat there and talked for about 3.5 hours just so he felt comfortable. And I said, let's go upstairs to the bedroom, or to the room. I said, I just want to hold you. I don't want you to take your clothes off. And we just sat there. He was so comfortable with that. And about 2.5 hours later, when he left, he says, boy, I really, really felt comfortable with you. And that to me was almost as good as having sex. It was that intimate moment, just holding him, and you know, and just whispering things into his ear.
Yep.
And it was totally satisfying. And so, I mean, that's what I can say about being intimate. But I'm also intimate with my friends also, and that helps, because you have to live day to day.
Very good. Thank you. Just as a quick trivia question, how far back do you and I go, Marty?
1986?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
I remember it far. Mm-hmm. Good memory. And that was pretty intimate, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Please.
I'm John. For me, intimacy is the ability to open up to a person your deepest, darkest secrets, and to trust that they don't suddenly throw it up on Twitter, YouTube, whatever. Because I've been through both.
Right.
I've had stuff that I've said to people just suddenly show up on the internet and I'm like, what the? fuck is all this? And I also am in what they call a mixed marriage. I'm positive, my partner is negative. And that has caused an awful lot of losing trust in people, believe it or not. If I'm both my partner's life and my life, I mean, we've written off a couple hundred people easily just on the fact that there's stuff that's getting put up on the internet or just gossip over the back fence about, oh, you can't trust this one, or you can't trust that one, this one is this and this one's that. And it's like, you know what? Don't need you.
Thank you.
How about you?
Hi, I'm Jorge, and this is my first time here.
Welcome to.
Thank you. And, you know, both of them, trust and intimacy, I'm really kind of learning all over again. I was not trustworthy. So because I was not trustworthy, you were not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. And I'm becoming trustworthy, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, and I'm not there with intimacy. I don't know much about it, and I would be lying to you guys if I sat here and tried to tell you anything about it, because I really don't know much about it. I know how to fuck, but to tell you that I've had meaningful long-term relationships with anybody would be a lie. I have not. I'm 38 years old, years young, 38 years young, and that, you know, like I said, goes back to my being untrustworthy. I didn't trust myself, let alone I would trust you. So I am now starting to trust myself and love myself, and that is starting to creep out. And as a direct result of it, I think that's why I'm here.
Very good. Now, just quick show of hands, everybody. How many people hear what he just said and want to reach out to him immediately? Yeah. Just be really clear. You probably think that, oh, you're so fucking damaged, and, oh, you're going to be so unacceptable, and blah, 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 blah. Just, we all have a fucking story. The thing is that by you sharing with dedicated listeners here in this room, instead of us going, ew, what did I just step in? They go, oh, I want to help you get to this place. Here's the thing about self-actualization. One of the side benefits of being self-actualized is all you want to do is help other people get up to that same level. That's really what this group is about. We're going to shift you several levels as time goes by. Not forcibly. We're going to invite you. It's fun. Come on. That sort of stuff. That's what I was talking about, taking chances and being rewarded for it. The more you show up, the more we get to find out how you blossom in the world, how you blossom forth. Because by you being so authentic just now, that was very authentic. I mean, like, wow, that was good stuff. Powerful. There's a lot of power in what you said. I admire that deeply. Admirable. I respect you for it because you're being respectable. I honor your truth because you're honorable. I want to find out exactly how lovable you are. So stick around. Yeah, exactly. So stick around. Please keep coming. I think you'll notice you fit right in. Because we all show up with our burden. All you have to do is just leave it by the side of the road. We don't care anymore. We're not going to judge you by any of that other stuff. The past is the past. Let's see how you show up now. Thank you. Please.
My name's DJ, and I have trouble with, like, intimacy. For me is to remove my glasses and
got it.
Allow people in. most days it's very difficult. But through the process of allowing myself to go beyond everything that I knew before, I arrived here, in this place, with all of you. I was in a lifetime relationship till death do us part. He passed away. And all of a sudden I felt like I was alone in the world. The most intimate moment I've ever had in my life was listening to his last breath and laying in his arms, and suddenly he was gone. I've grown a lot since that moment, and today I'm trying to create a new life for myself, and I chose a path that also included recovery from alcohol and drugs. Part of that intimacy that began a little over 20 months ago, I came here for a spanking demonstration, and I've been coming ever since, and my greatest desire is to be spanked properly, because it's not so much that I'm nutty, it's just some, like, I can be really good. The best information I got from this group was you had us take an exam. And the exam said that people like me were in 1% of the population on the planet. And that explained why I was so hypersensitive to light and sound, and most of all, energy, people's energy and what they think. So I tend to pick up on vibrations, and I used to find it really terrifying. But the more clearer I get, the more I start to understand the intimacy that exists with all things, the suchness of things, the oneness in life. I don't often talk about what I really think or what I really feel because most people don't get it.
Yep.
You know? My biggest vulnerability was to confide in you and trust you, because the idea of flogging was absolutely insane. I mean, there's a history of slavery in this planet. You think I'm gonna let some white dude whip my ass? Are you fucking crazy? So that was a very intimate moment to be able to tell you that I suffered from PTSD, from a violent, brutal beating, and to allow you in. And so, when it was offered at me at Pride, I said, there's no one that I trust. I said, there's only one man that I trust for this. And the honor is all mine, yet it's all yours too.
It was.
And so, that was a lesson learned, that intimacy is more than I really imagined. And it's really a lot about what I feel. I try not to think. How do I be vulnerable? How do I be receptive, acceptance, surrender? All these things are all tied up in this one moment, right now. This is the most intimate thing I think we've done as a group, to actually share what we think and feel may or may not be intimate and trust. I find it extraordinary. Sometimes to get to the extraordinary, you have to let go of everything. All preconceived notions, all judgments, all expectations, and just be in the now. And that's what my practice is. To return, to learn, to expand, and to grow. That's the most intimate thing I've got here, is knowledge. I've got knowledge that there's more to me than meets the eye. And it's okay for me to be kind and loving and compassionate, empathetic, and to actually care about my fellow people on this planet, let alone in this room. The room is just icing on the fucking cake, because I get to be around other people. They frighten me and learn that they're really okay too. So intimacy for me is a big deal. I like cuddling, I like passion, I like kissing, those intimate ways. But it's the psychological intimacy that I find most endearing, because that sense of trust and friendship and camaraderie lasts a lifetime potentially, because I didn't have friends when I came here, and I couldn't even be touched, and I rarely spoke. But I found my voice, and I've allowed myself to be touched. And through that process, I've met some really interesting people that I would cherish for a lifetime. And the neat thing is, some of them even love me back. So, love, for me, is the key to my life. It always has been. It's just the rest of the world didn't operate like that. So, when you come from a place of unconditional love and forgiveness, what more intimate that gift could you give yourself with everyone? You don't have to like everyone. You ain't paying your bills, you ain't fucking them, you know, they don't feed you, yada, yada, yada. I get that. But when you go behind closed doors and you have those moments, like now, because we are behind closed doors, there's an extreme opportunity for knowledge. And my thirst is unquenchable. I'm trying to figure out who I am, because I cannot define it. What I can say is that the more I learn, the more I grow, the more trust and intimacy. It's like a bank. I'm putting it in the bank, so eventually I'll cash it in, and I'll know exactly how to behave and what to expect, so that I can go from terror and fear to fearlessness and sheer bliss. I had an extraordinary moment with you in that clothing thing, and the second time was even more intense, because I did it with someone who was afraid. And I talked to him about it, and then he did it, and then I did it after him. And I have to say, I love you for that moment, ever since then. You know, I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be afraid all the time that you don't leave your house. I didn't leave my house for 2 decades before I got to San Diego. So, I have to say, this is an eye-opening experience. And I'm so done. I'm putting my glasses back on, so bye.
Well, DJ, we've known each other for a little while here. And what I assert, it's your hypersensitivity, your extreme vulnerability, your big antennas to the world in the past have been what made you wrong, have made you broken, have made you awkward, made you inappropriate. What I assert is that at this phase in your life, they're now your superpower. And that's what we love the most about you. Good man. Please.
Hi. I'm Tony. There's little that I can add. I've heard so many great things. So I just want to break it down like Scott said. There's the physical element and the emotional element. And I can get physical in a heartbeat. And that's very satisfying. And what Marty described, that kind of, you know, the comfort of somebody in your arms, I can just melt and feel like a wonderful person. I don't even have to know your name. And it's very, very satisfying to me. Then there's the emotional part where you share an inside joke with somebody. You share an expression on their face. You've gone through an experience with another. People have gone through a plane crash. You've experienced an emotional catharsis. You build a relationship with somebody. That's the intimacy that takes time. That's the intimacy that has value to me. And that also involves trust. And that's where you start to combine intimacy with the trust, because now as you feel intimate with somebody, you're ready to let your guard down and trust them with who you are. And sometimes you connect and sometimes you don't. But until you let that guard down and you have the self-assurance that you can survive any disappointment you have, you'll grow. So anyway, this is why this group is so great, because they're pushing those boundaries of trust and intimacy. Most people never get this far. We're very, very lucky.
Yes.
Guys, this is my friend, and this is my sponsor. Yeah. And because I couldn't put into words the way I feel the world, I insisted that he come here, and he comes with me all the time. And the more I've been with him, the more I've watched him just like blossom, like you say. Oh, I didn't even have to pour water on him.
It's been a pleasure to see you, too. Thank you.
I'm Kurt, for those who don't know. It's funny, I've been to a bunch of these meetings, and this is the first time it's gone all the way around and someone hasn't passed.
That's nice.
It's kind of fascinating. Also, in part, because I'm not really a shy guy, but it's one of the first times I've thought about passing, which is interesting. I think, it doesn't make sense to try to define intimacy or trust anymore at this point. Everyone's said a lot of really great things, but there's a real value on intimacy to me that it's really something special and private to me. So when I come to events and stuff like that, and I don't know, the whole like being flogged in front of a group of people, that's really foreign to me, because that's something that's very private and intimate to me. So it's, I'm doing my best and trying to expand those horizons and stuff like that, but gosh, the perspective on intimacy or that kind of connection is a little different for me than I see in the group, and not that it's good or bad, it's an adjustment.
My request, and you don't have to do this, but my request, my invitation to you, again, is to hark back to the metaphor that I use of naked three-year-olds playing together in a mud puddle. Really, that's what I invite you to take on. Whenever there's public play, it's not putting on a show. It's not trying to impress other people. It's actually what we had last night, which was deeply, deeply intimate. Very deeply. in a way that worked for everybody. Everybody was rewarded for it. And that it's just playtime. That's all it is. So I'm just saying that whatever it is that holds you back in circumstances like that, my invitation to you is see it entirely from an innocent standpoint rather than whatever has happened in the past. So, please.
My name is Tommy. The difference between trust and intimacy to me is actually really simple to me. Trust to me is something where if you care about somebody and they show that they care about you, then do anything you can to help. Don't expect anything in return. They will show it. And after that, things will grow. Now, as an intimacy, I just can't wrap it. Intimacy, the only way I've ever experienced anything like this, haven't really experienced it that much, but the only times I have, it was actually when I was in the leather realm and I could play with the puppies. And it's when I put my puppy mask on and I hear the zipper go down, because then I don't have to give a fuck about people judging me about any fucking thing. I can just be me. I can be fucking happy.
Yep.
I don't really give a fuck. And, I feel like a kid, and I didn't really have a childhood.
I'm sure there'll be more as time goes by, and however that shows up and whenever that shows up, we're here for you, love. Always.
Hi. My name's Mark. And first thing I want to say is this has been so wonderful hearing different perspectives about trust and intimacy and seeing where other people have been hurt and really wounded. In terms of, and I will take away with a lot of red eyes and a lot of crying that I've done as I've heard different people's stories, and it's really touched my heart. And in terms of trust, my parents, I grew up in a family where they said, do whatever you want, say whatever you want, you know, you're perfect just the way you are, and, you know, we love you just exactly however you want to be, and I tend to be really, really out there from a personality perspective. And in the leather community, my trust has been jeopardized so many times sexually, where I give and give and give, and I've had people take advantage of me sexually or emotionally, and even outside of sex too. I find that I just tend to be a giving person, and unfortunately the users come up and take. So the trust is something that I still have a hard time not giving when I find somebody like Tony. I give trust really, really quick, and I got flogged by him last night, you know, in front of a number of people, and I think I still had like 10% of my clothes on when you got done, right?
Yes,
and those are my shoes.
They were just in different places, yeah. That not usually shouldn't be.
Right, yeah. How that has really impacted my ability to have intimate relationships with people, both on a friendship level and romantically, and specifically romantically, I just almost will not go to a very intimate place. I can have sex, but I just won't let my guard down to the place that I get intimate, because I've just been burned too many times. And what I will say is, as a result of last night, you know, I knew Gary and Amin and Jeremy pretty well before last night, but all three of you gave me a hug tonight that was different than any hug that you've ever given me. And that is very special, and I'll take that away tonight and remember that forever. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And it was so great to meet people like Brian and Gary and Scott and just all of you guys. I really appreciated the love and compassion that you guys showed me last night. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Gary, and I have to say it's so wonderful to find a person like Mark, like Tommy, and like Papa, who are not afraid to cry, because I'm the biggest crier around. I must tell you, since I joined this group, I have found that sex isn't everything. It's learning to know somebody emotionally, intimately. I mean, probably the most intimate relationship that I ever experienced was last night with Mark, with Amin, with Gary, with Brian. It was something that was like out of this world. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I don't know that five people have now formed a bond that I don't think that can ever be broken. I think we would always be there for each other, and the expression goes, in sickness or in health. And really, it was like, I thank all of you. I thank the entire group for what I've taken from everybody. Oh. And I think that everybody can see the growth to some extent that I have made from a year ago when I joined this group. That it's not what I came in here thinking it was going to be.
Very good. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
So I'm Patrick, and I think the biggest lesson I've had to learn for myself was the difference between trust and expectation. So I had a lot of expectations in life that were not fulfilled, but that really wasn't what trust was about. I built the expectations. I decided what that was going to be, and if something didn't fulfill that, that's what was broken, not my trust. But then I have two or three different levels of trust. Like, one of them is I had a really harsh life, so I have an extreme sense of trust in my ability to survive. I can survive anything. I don't care what it is. I've lost everything in life. I've lost myself. I've died several times. You know. You know what? I fucking survived, and I'm still going to survive. So I trust in that. So I don't even worry about that anymore. It doesn't matter. If I did die, I don't even worry about that. Because I've already been there, so it doesn't matter. But so I have that trust. And the other thing is, I trust in anybody else that's in my life just to be themselves. I don't expect them to be something. I don't want them to be something else. I trust them to be themselves, just like I trust myself to be myself. So I have a sense of honesty, maybe a little harshly too honest, about myself, and I'm like a blaring speaker about myself. I just throw it out there, and that's the way I am. But I also just expect you to be yourself, and I don't really care. If you're the guy that's always going to be an hour late, yay. Who gives a shit? You know? Who cares? I don't expect you to be anything except you. And I cherish the fact that you're in my life. And that's it. I don't care about anything else. And if for some reason, may not even be able to define it, I don't understand why you aren't important in my life, I don't try to interpret that. I just trust that to be whatever it is. For some reason, you're not. But if you are, then I really cherish that. But when it comes to intimacy, the only thing I can give it is exactly what Tony was saying. For me, intimacy is being with somebody. I don't care what you're doing. You're laughing like a 3-year-old. You're laughing naked in bed because it was the silliest, stupid thing ever. Or you're laughing at the stand-up, walk-up diner, and somebody said something, and you look at them, and you don't see them. You see them as a little kid, and it's fucking hilarious. And that's awesome. And that's intimacy to me. It's because I can't equate sex with all of that, because I'm just a sexual animal. So that's a bucket you can't fill anyway. So why tie that shit to everything else? Just stand there and laugh about it. Laugh about everything. That's all you can do. That's the best thing. Celebrate that.
I like it too. So how long have you two known each other?
6 months?
Yeah.
How did you meet?
At the cigar smoker. I walked up to him and asked him who he was with. He said, nobody. I said, you need my number then.
Good liar. Effective liar. I like
you're
it.
You're not forward at all.
No.
Please.
My name is Michael. Odd concepts for me. Intimacy is as natural for me as breathing. There's a sensuality in practically every aspect of just relating to other people, whether it just be talking, having a meal, having sex. It's all part of the package. So intimacy is always there. It's always present for me. Trust, on the other hand, is an even odder concept to me, because if I had to put a definition to trust is me being at one with this dusty old world. I don't take a lot personally. I realize that people are doing things out of their own reality, that it's not something personal to me, so trust as a concept doesn't even come into play, because it doesn't mean anything in that dynamic. I kind of start, if you're going to take trust as most people define it, I start at 100%. And it might go down, but it will go back. It will always go back up to 100%. And that's just me.
Really? Very good, thank you. Please.
My name is David, and it's amazing how I have sat here and definitions change as you hear other people's views. trust is something I've always had an issue with. It's very easy for me to give, but it's not so easy for me to accept. It's hard for me to trust people, but I try. Intimacy really changed tonight for me, because it showed me that it's the ability to expose yourself regardless of the rejection that you may be afraid of. Mm-hmm. And that also ties in with knowing yourself and being able to share that with other people, because if you can't be honest with yourself, you can't be honest with anyone else.
I'm sorry, we're interrupting. Keep talking. There we go. From this side, I'm sorry, but this is just too sweet. I mean, this is a textbook example of what it is that we're talking about all along. Okay. It's a perfect example of how things work when they work well. This doesn't happen unless we have dropped the shields with each other, unless we found some reason to just relax and be intimate. This is a puppy pile we're looking at over here. It's as sweet can be. I can't wait to see the picture. So, Jeremy, what would you like to add? Anything?
I think that several people helped sum up what I was trying to say, and that intimacy is letting somebody see the unpackaged version of yourself. The version that is not pretty and ready for public view, the version that is unashamed and not afraid to just completely be oneself, not filtered. And that's why I said it's something that I can share. It doesn't matter if it is the gender, there's just certain people that you can share that true, unfiltered side of yourself. There's physical intimacy. You can have lots of that, but real intimacy is unfiltered you.
Very good.
Thank you.
So, gentlemen, let's go ahead and wind up that portion of it, and now let's go to the really fun stuff. Oh, here, pardon me. You guys have seen the pictures going around. I've talked about this earlier. I'm going to really push it into your brain. For 2014 San Diego Pride, nobody is off the hook. Everyone is obligated. I'm putting a gun to your head, and I am dragging your ass along with me by the testicles if I have to. But I want this to be something that transforms everyone's understanding of us. What happened, as you'll see from the reviews that I'll be publishing in the newsletter, is the people who were on the sidelines watching the parade, who were keeping the crowd back, more than any other contingent had difficulty holding the crowd back when we showed up. Everybody wanted to be a part of it, because here's all these serenely happy, confident, joyful, affectionate, great guys who trust each other and clearly like each other. This energy through the whole fucking thing, the whole route, every step of the route. Magnum, what do you want to tell us about what happened?
It was exactly like you said. People were really engaging. People were running out in the street and wanted to touch and feel. And it was just really cohesive. And it was a diversity of it was women and men together. And we were marching down the in the parade. And you could just feel the energy. And I really, something has shifted. And I can't put my finger on it. But it could be intimacy. It could be being related. It could be trust. That's what it could be.
Yes, please.
It's
very true to that too, because I was one of those people that was holding people back. I volunteered during the parade, and I was on University Avenue over by 1202, where they were doing some judging, and I was trying to keep people away from the tent area where people were judging so that people could see. And everybody around the area where I was for sure was getting very excited when your group started, our group started coming together, and I wish that I could have just followed along with you guys and went to the end of the parade.
Oh, yeah.
I had to volunteer.
Well, thank you for doing what needed to be done. But see, we need witnesses to history. That's really what was going on. We had multiple photographers doing our part. Just a moment. But what we also had was a whole lot of people who were suddenly thinking, wait a second, something's different. Because we used to. See, you have to understand, this was my 38th Pride. When we first started trying to do the leather contingent a long time ago, we got hassled. We were mistrusted. We still are. We're fixing that very effectively by transforming the conversation. We'll talk more about that. But we got a lot of rules thrown at us. We got, even within our tribe, there was conflict. The first time that we did leather in the parade as a separate thing, there were two widely separated contingents because the two contingents couldn't stand each other. Okay. We don't have that anymore. It's done. It's gone. It's over. But what's going to happen next year? Like I said, we're inviting people from every city that wants to come join us and be a part of history. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to be pushing it, pushing it, pushing it. But so will Ron, Aaron, Eli, Jeremy. You know, anybody with big social circles. Everybody. I'm enrolling you in enrolling your friends. Why? Why would we care? What's the fucking point? For a long time, in our culture, we have been treated as less than, as the dirty secret of the community, as the guys who are the diseased subculture that everybody kind of wishes would go away. Oh, why do they always show the Leathermen on the news? Why can't they have normal people? But you know what they showed this year? This is so funny. About 4 months ago, I was a petty fool. I got all pissy. I got pissed off because those goddamn heterosexual horsey people are always marching with us in the parade, pulling the carts and dressed like horses. And it's like, for God's sake, you know, why are they here? They're from L.A. You know, why do we want them here? And then I finally let go of it. I said, okay, I'm making too big of a case out of it. I'm done. But I was watching the news, and we headlined Leatherfolk in the parade, headlined the news on multiple channels. That we really did. But it, when you see the horsey people, I think, oh, my God, I started laughing. I realized they make us look executive. I thought, okay, they can be the new one, the ones that people say, oh, my God, you know, cover your eyes, children. You don't want to see somebody hung like a horse, you know. But no, what I'm saying is that what we have now is the possibility in 2014 to not only have the largest contingent, but the most unified, the most cohesive, the most brotherly, and packed together, smiling, diverse as a motherfucker, all different ages, all different colors, all different body styles, all different experience levels. You don't have to be in gear. Just be with us. Be present. And be absolutely intimate. And that's what people's experience of us will be. Right now, anybody who has any experience of us knows that we are the most desirable demographic at all after being the least desirable demographic. We're wanted everywhere that we go. It's time for the 150,000 people watching the Pride Parade to get the news.